Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
All right, we're going to get started now this evening. A couple of things before we get started. First of all, of course, our website is NewYorkCommitteeMen.org. Hopefully people should visit as often as possible. And, you know, pretty much anything we talk about here in this room, we have up on our website. We've got tons of stuff up there. And once we unmute everyone, anybody who's coming in here on a phone line that's able to talk, they might want to mute themselves if and when they're not talking. Hey, Gerard, can you give Ken a call and help him out? I think he's trying to get into the room. I'm not sure. But anyway, tonight we're going to look a little bit at the Magna Carta. Oh, one other thing. Last week we were looking at a generic court case for towns. I'd like to just spend a minute or two on that. For anybody who wants to know where a copy of that is at, we have it up on our website, newyorkcommitteeman.org. If you go out there and you click on the left side, click on Judicial Process, and once you get onto that page, there's a bunch of tabs on the top of that page, click on Common Law. That's the page, of course, where we teach court access and common law procedure, court of record, and everything we got on it is out on that page. But anyway, you come down below the videos there. There's two short videos. And right below the videos, I have a generic answer to town court. And you click here. And so if you click on that click here button, you then will get a copy of the generic town an answer, or you might want to call it a pleading, but an answer to the town court if you're arrested for something or if you're ticketed for something. And most people are ticketed for something and they got to go in and the summons. But once you go into the summons, I believe we covered this, but once you go in for the summons, that's when they arraign you, whether it's a parking ticket, a moving violation ticket, a violation on a gun or something, or, you know, just about anything that you might be going to the town court for. And so they arraign you there, and that's when they get control over you. If you respond to that arraignment, then you're acknowledging and giving them control. But anyway, I reposted a new one. Since last week, I updated the one we had, and this one I think is much better. Of course, we're always tweaking our work. So this is the latest that we've gotten to. And what we're really trying to do is put the court into a box where they can't answer. Where they know, well, they can't answer anyway. They just don't know that. We're trying to let them know they can't answer. But in any event, I'm also going to post some information up there on how, I guess, an instructional sheet. I'm busy right now. I guess an instructional sheet on this. We'll go through the details of what to do and what the steps are when you go to court and how they'll probably respond or how they can respond, what to do if they do this and what to do if they do that. And we'll put some other forms together up there to progress along, because the whole point is for them to release you from their jurisdiction. And if you're diligent and persistent and continue to educate yourself in these things, you'll beat it. It may take a little time. But again, the first person to do it in your town where the court finally breaks and realizes there's nothing they can do about it, well, you just set the stage and the road for the second person and the third person and so on. And hopefully everyone will catch up on this and do it. You know, it's good for people that are in the courtroom that might see you making this argument. They may get interested and they may try it too. And again, the point is to spread this. One other thing, we did put a new video up on our line, and I think it's on the judicial. Yeah, if you go on the left side, newyorkcommitteeman.org, left side, click on the judicial process. Now, we have two videos on that page. One talks about voluntary servitude by deception. And the second video I just recently found, this is a pretty long one. It's about almost an hour and a half. It is an hour and 26 minutes long. And it's called Slavery by Consent. Anyway, I watched this video this week, and I thought it was good enough to put it up on our website because it really does give a lot of information on what's going on and how they achieved and did what they did in order to bring us into slavery. Every one of us is already in constructive slavery. We pay our taxes, whether it be land tax or your income tax, and we obey their laws. They legislated our behavior, and we're controlled by the court. And the bottom line on all these things is the United States has more people in prison than any other country. We have more people in prison than any other country, and we're supposed to be the freest country, and nothing could be further from the truth. The things we get arrested for and cannot do that people do in other countries, we can't do here. But anyway, just to make one other point clear, and we'll move on to looking a little bit at the Magna Carta tonight. These courts that we, and let me make a correction, because in the past we have said that that a town court is a court of record. That was an error. We'd recently come upon some statutes that listed all of the courts of records, and the town court was not listed amongst them. So we went back into the Constitution, and we misunderstood, at least I misunderstood, what it was saying, being a legislative court. So any court that's legislated, there are certain courts that have been legislated but given power by the Constitution to be legislated and can be courts of record. Town courts are not. So town courts are what's called a nisi prius court. A nisi prius court is a court created by statutes and controlled by statutes. That's important to know. Your town courts are nisi prius courts. If you get arrested for this new gun law, for instance, and brought before a court, before a judge, they're going to bring you to a town or a city court, which is a nisi prius court. You can challenge it, you can challenge the jurisdiction, and you can beat it if you're persistent with it. So the only court that has any authority over you is a court that has the ability for you to be, when a grand jury comes out and I'm trying to think of the word. But in any event, you're brought in by a grand jury. And so when the grand jury brings the charges up against you, then that is a real charge. That's a charge of we the people coming up and bringing the charge against someone. That's constitutional. The other way you could be charged in a common law court or a real court system, usually Supreme Court, would be by someone. And this could be done in a town court also. And if there's an injured party and they bring up accusations against you, but they must have a sworn affidavit. And the word I was looking for was indicted, for the grand jury to indict you. But anyway, there must be an injured party in order for you to be brought before a court and tried for any reason. So that about 99% of the times that people go before the court, they're not indicted, and there is nobody with a sworn affidavit. Maybe 99% is a little high. Maybe it's less than that. I know Judge Bork, and I've mentioned this numerous times, said that 85% of the people that are in jail for minor crimes, and minor crimes is ultimately unconstitutional crimes, are there because they opened their mouth. In other words, they pleaded. They were asked, do you plead guilty, do you plead innocent, and they pleaded. Or they allowed the judge to plead for them. You must object to all these things. But even at the arraignment, just to let you know, if you really succumb to it, if they put you under a lot of pressure and you finally do make a plea and you say, oh, I'm not guilty, because you feel intimidated and maybe you feel you're going to be put in jail, they're not going to give you bail or let you out on your own recognizance, whatever the case may be, the next time you come back into that court, you can challenge it. You can challenge jurisdiction at any time. You could be arrested, convicted, and in jail, and realize, hey, wait a second, these guys don't have jurisdiction of me, and you can challenge it. So an EC Prius court is a court created by statutes, controlled by statutes, and it has nothing to do with us. And this is important. If everybody realized this, they wouldn't have to worry about the gun laws. If we piled up in the courts, refusing and rejecting their jurisdiction, eventually they'd get the message. And so these gun laws, again, they are going to be dealt with in town courts. The Supreme Court obviously will not deal with it because they can't. Okay, it'll be a town court that'll be done in. All right, I spent a little more time than I expected on that, but I think that's important information. And again, we'll get that information up there. I'm going to try to get up there in the next 24 hours. I'm going to a meeting tomorrow night, and I'd like to take this information with me, so I'll try to get it up online. Generic boilerplate for answering the town court in writing, we have it up there already. I'll be putting an instructional page and a few other documents which you'll be able to use as you progress in the court system, as you try to get out of the system. Okay, I'll focus on the Magna Carta. The Magna Carta is kind of a difficult document. At least I thought it was a difficult document to really appreciate, but I went through it slowly. I've heard others talk about it, and they've gleaned a lot of good things out of it, and I think I've gleaned quite a bit too. I've kind of put a synopsis together on it. And it became crystal clear to me that Jefferson, obviously, before he wrote the Declaration of Independence, obviously had read the Magna Carta. And all of the great philosophers and thinkers, particularly of justice, of the 17th century, obviously Jefferson had studied them. He had read their books because when you go back and read these great people like Locke and many others, you'll see a lot of Jefferson's words. That's where he got his knowledge from. That's where he got his judicial teeth sort of cut. But anyway, the Magna Carta. I'd like to read sort of a synopsis I put together on the Magna Carta and make some certain points. And then a couple other things. Jefferson had 8 principles that he had made a point about. He called them 8 ancient principles, and you can see these 8 ancient principles in the Declaration of Independence. But the Magna Carta is also called the Great Charter. It was signed the first time June 15th, 1215 AD. And I've had some conversations, which I was kind of surprised with, some people who said, hey, wait a second, the Magna Carta. Some people say, oh, it's ancient, it's old. Well, that's where common law comes from, and it comes back even further than that. Actually, common law goes back to the first written information about it, goes back about 1,500 years B.C. 1,500 B.C., it goes back to Moses on the mountain. That's where it began in writing, in a book, being written about. The Anglo-Saxons, of course, they brought it to England. We've spoke about that in the past, maybe about 400 A.D., and it flourished in England for quite some time. And the purpose of the king, which eventually came out of that, was he was there to protect our sovereignty. We had one sovereign, and if you had a problem, you'd call on the king, and he would protect your sovereignty. And those people that would call on them were called freemen. I also realized that there are still a lot of citizens and subjects. And we have that in the United States. We have most of the people around us are citizens or subjects. And that's what they want to be, you know. We'll always have citizens and we'll always have subjects. I don't know that we'll ever be able to get away from that. But it's up to you to stand up to take your freedom and to demand it. But anyway, the Magna Carta was initiated by 25 free men. And that is what it became, the first grand jury. Our grand jury is 25. By the way, our government has set up a jury of 24, one less than what's necessary. Also, the jury, the true jury, comes out from the people. The jury that our government set up comes out from the government. There are actually people that are screened out, screened to questioned and screened, and then they're paid a salary, and they hold. I think they serve for 18 months. I was reading up a little bit on it recently, and sometimes longer. You know, you can, I guess, re-up it or whatever. A true grand jury is not paid. They come out from the people, and when they see an injustice, they get up and they indict people. And we have to get back to that. So anyway, Magna Carta was put together by 25 free men, which again was the first grand jury. And the main thing that they declared was liberty under God guaranteed for all. That's what the Magna Carta was all about. And anybody who puts down the Magna Carta, calls it an ancient paper, says you know, that was for, you know, a couple of hundred years ago, and so on and so forth. Well, they're the enemies of liberty, because this was the first paper to set up something in writing for freedom. Except for the case of the Bible was of course first, but as far as a document written by men. Now the king. When this charter was signed, the king was threatened at the end of an axe. They told the king if he didn't sign it, they would take in his head. The reason why they put this document up is because the king went out of control. And I know I've met a couple of people, one person in particular I can think of, who said, well, the Magna Carta, you know, that's no good. That was done under duress. They forced that on the king. Well, yeah, and we're going to have to force it on this government too, aren't we? Yeah, exactly. We had a king out of control. The king was set up to protect our sovereignty, and just like our government is set up to protect our liberty, and they get out of control, well, we got to fix it. And if we have to threaten it at the end of an axe to do it, then that's what we have to do. So some of the ideas that came out of the Magna Carta, I'm going to read this, some notes I made. This is the Magna Carta to the people, to all government servants, justices, sheriffs, bailiffs, and citizens. Know that we, by the will of God, and for the safety of our soul, and of the souls of all our predecessors and our heirs, to the honor of God, and for the exaltation of the body of Christ, and the bettering of our realm, and by the counsel of our revered fathers. So that is sort of the prelude to the Magna Carta. First of all, having knowledge of God, and for us and for our heirs forever, have confirmed by this present charter that the Church of God shall be free and shall have its rights intact and its liberties uninfringed upon. And thus we will that it be observed that we did grant and by our charter confirm and did cause all government to confirm free elections, which is considered most important and the most necessary of the body, which charter both we ourselves shall observe, and we will that it be observed with good faith by our heirs forever. We have also granted to all people of our realm, on the part of ourselves and our heirs forever, all the subjoined liberties to have and to hold to them and to their heirs from us and from our heirs. We will not make men justices. Now, I found this is very interesting, this phrase right here we're going to read about. I just want to look back at something I just read. I want to make a note of something. And maybe I'll come back to that. But this here, it says, we will not make men justices. We will not make men constables. We will not make men sheriffs. We will not make men bailiffs unless they are such as know the law of the realm and are minded to observe it rightly. And that's our job. It is our job to know the law of our realm, which is the Constitution and what is liberty. And we know how, we need to know how to observe it ourselves rightly in order to choose people as justices and sheriffs and bailiffs and constables. Another one, all evil customs shall straightway be inquired into in each country and shall be eradicated by them entirely. Henceforth, the writ, which is called precipice, shall not be served on anyone for any holdings so as to cause a free man to lose his court. And let me tell you, the courts do this all day long. They recently tried to do this to us again, throwing us out of court by whim, claiming we don't have a cause or it's just an empty case and so on. And nothing, of course, could be further from the truth. But this is what they do in courts, and we have to fight these people. Nothing can cause a free man to lose his court. No free man shall be taken or imprisoned except by the lawful judgment of his peers or by the law of the land. So again, you know, thou shalt not kill. That's the law of the land. You know, there isn't much to the law of the land. The key part to the law of the land is you know, if you injure an individual and they file a sworn affidavit that you injured them, either them or their property, then you can be arrested or you can be brought into a court, a civil court, and be sued. The only other way, of course, is for a jury or the grand jury to indict you. And other than those two ways, no man shall be imprisoned. This is something I just put a note in here, which is out of our case law here in the U.S. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, the rules, the regulations, the policies, the statutes are not law. You can't go to jail under them. They cannot apply them upon them unless you consent to it. Therein is nisi prius courts. And nisi prius court is a court created by statutes and operates by statutes. And if you want to accept them as law and pay a fine and go to jail or whatever it is that they're going to do to you, then you consent to that, and that's what's going to happen. And if you deny it and argue it and fight it, you will eventually win it, but others will have an easier time behind you. Anyway, that was Self versus Ray, the U.S. court case. In the Magna Carta again, it says, to none will we deny or delay justice. Justice will not be denied to any individual, nor shall it be delayed. And again, we have major problems in our country, and it is up to us who know about these things to step up and change it. You know, our Constitution is not going to defend itself. It's up to you to get up and defend it. We will firmly decree that the church shall be free and that the subjects of our realm shall have and hold all the aforesaid liberties, rights, and concessions, duly and in peace, freely and quietly, fully and entirely, for themselves, for their heirs, from us and our heirs in all matters and in all places forever, as has been said. Right, that's pretty much my sort of a synopsis of the Magna Carta. It's a great document. It's where freedom really stemmed from as far as the first written document. Freedom had been around for quite some time. Common law had been around for quite some time. It's not written. It's unwritten. But here is the first time that men came together to put it together in a document. Of course, the Bible is the first true written document by the finger of God concerning common law. The entire Bible is common law, and it's the law of God. But in any event, this is man's first attempt. I thought it was pretty well done. It's a little different difficult language. And the next attempt was done with the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, is Thomas Jefferson. And then, of course, this gave us our constitutions. And that's the law of the land and maxims, undeniable truths. All right, here are eight ancient principles written by Thomas Jefferson, who said, I'd rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending to much liberty than to those intending to a small degree of it. Now here, first, number one item that he is, I don't know that it's necessarily in any order that he gives it any merit. That's not the way freedom works, so. But here are 8 points. Point number one, sound government should be based on self-evident truths. Those are called maxims. These truths should be so obvious, so rational, and so morally sound that their authorities, the authenticity is beyond reasonable dispute. Number two, the equal stations, and listen to some of these words, you could see where, this is pre-Declaration of Independence. The equal stations of mankind here on earth is an obvious and inherent aspect of the law of nature and of nature's God. Number three, it is a self-evident truth that the Creator made human beings equal in their rights, equal before the bar of justice, and equal in His sight. Number four, these rights bestowed by the Creator on each individual are unalienable. Number five, among the most important of the unalienable rights are the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to pursue whatever course of life a person may desire in search of happiness, so long as it does not invade the interest in the inherent rights of others. Number six, the most basic reason for a community or nation to set up a system of government is to assure its inhabitants that the rights of the people shall be protected and preserved. Number seven, and because this is so, it follows that no office or agency of government has the right to exist except with the consent of the people or their representative consentors. That's the committee man, and they've robbed us of it. We need to take that back. We should never rest until we get that back. Number eight, it also follows that if a government, either by malfeasance or neglect, fails to protect those rights, or even worse, if a government itself begins to violate those rights, and I think that's where we're at today, then it is the right and the duty of the people to regain control of their affairs and set up a form of government which will serve the people better. And so we are at that time that we have a duty, and that duty is to regain control of our affairs. And there's nothing wrong with the form of government we have. It's the people running that government. We need to get rid of these people, and we need to refill these positions with honest and just people. Okay, let me just finish off here with a few points from the Declaration of Independence, written July 4th, or, you know, it's attributed to July 4th, 1776. That's the date that ultimately was revealed to the people. It was signed a little later, but that's irrelevant. But this is when it was revealed, July 4th, 1776. And we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whatever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So I'd like to make a couple of conclusions of self-rule here. The committee men are the consenters of our political process, one from each election district, one from each party, chosen by the people. They are the ones that have total control and say and consent on our government. Point number two, the grand jury are the 25 consenters of our judicial process, again, chosen by the people. They come up out from the people. Every county, at bare minimum, should have a grand jury. And we should have more than 25, you know, but at any given time, 25 can be drawn out of that grand jury pool. And this is our goal. This is what we must do. We must put these things back together. And we can achieve this working together and using, of course, the committee men as that springboard. Number three, a free jury of our peerage. That's free people, not citizens. I don't want a citizen sitting on my jury. If anything, if I have to be judged, I want my peerage. I want people who are people, a free jury of our peerage, people who understand liberty. Decide both facts and law by 12 people. When you go into court today, and we were talking about this week because there was a big case down in New York City, a big tax case, and that jury was directed, you can decide the facts, and you're going to have to be true to yourself with the facts because the facts is this, that, and the other thing, but I'm going to decide the law, so says the judge to the jury. And he tells the jury how they are going to rule if they find A, B, and C. And they will find A, B, and C, particularly in a tax court. So that is not for the judge to do. And if you have a court of record and you come up and you're to be tried by your own peers, the judge is not permitted to direct these jurors to make a decision in any way, shape, or form, this way or that way. It's up to the jury to decide both the facts and the law. And, you know, if they decide this law is stupid or it doesn't work, at least not in this case, well, that's the will of the jury. That's their right. If they say to themselves, well, hey, this guy is guilty, but we want to have mercy because of A, B, and C, whatever that may be, that's the will of the jury. And that's liberty and that's righteousness. Every case is a case unto itself and cannot be decided by legislation. And that's what a judge is trying to do when he tries to box in a jury, to tell the jury, hey, if it goes this way, you got to do this. If it goes that way, you got to do that. Okay? The other thing is through the committee man process, as we build this and work through it, Lord willing, that we take control of it, and it looks really good that we will be. But anyway, when that happens, we'll be involved with a lot of people across the state, and we can create jury pools in every county. So if people get in trouble, that's where you want to go pull a jury from, a jury of your peers. Okay, that's it. Let me open up the phone, the mics here, and let me see, unmute all. Okay, everybody's open. We're open now for questions or comments, either about the things we just spoke about or anything else that we've been speaking about in this room for our purpose, which, again, is focusing in on a judicial process and our political process. Mic's open.
Yeah, hello.
Hey.
Yeah, hi, it's Carl. How's it going?
How you doing, Carl?
Good. You covered all the basics. I was going to ask how you anticipate or would like to drive the grand jury process, in your own county. I guess it sounds easier than it is to try to get 25 people together on board. I remember Bill talking about this and saying that you want to set up in their court or in the town court or wherever, I guess the Supreme Court, right, where your Supreme Court building is, and start out small. He said, don't go big, don't go for the grand things so that they then marginalize you and take you down to the newspapers, TV and whatnot, but take on the small cases, the bad contracts by county officials and friends that he knows type of thing, I suppose. But any ideas on how you would go about it?
Sure. Yeah, we, and you being a part of we also, looking at the things that Thornton has said, and that's where we'll start. As a small group here or a small group there, yeah, we should stick and focus in on our towns or our counties, depending. I belong to a liberty group. We have a couple of hundred people in it, and that's countywide. So, we would focus in on our county. The jury comes and deals with court cases through the Supreme Court, and each county seat has a Supreme Court. So that jury pool or that grand jury, or let's start off with the grand jury. That grand jury would be focused in on the county seat because that's where they would want to meet at the county courthouse. They'd want to try to get a room in there. There's a couple of ideas that Thornton threw out. I'm sure when we meet and start talking about these things, other people will come some ideas. But we will eventually take a seat within that and get some authority and recognition from the court system by taking a seat within their county building, which is our right, and they cannot reject that. If you wanted to get the people together for any reason, and you want to use a town hall or even a county hall, a place of meeting, you have every right to go and file for, you know, a point of time that you'd like to use that room or, you know, the town hall, the conference hall, or whatever it is. And as long as nobody else signed up for it, you got it. It belongs to the people. It's not government control. A lot of people don't realize that. That's important. That's where we start. So we start meeting in those buildings. For instance, in my county, we have maybe, that I'm aware of, roughly maybe 3 liberty groups, some active, some not so active, and so on. But between them, there's got to be 1,000 people at least. Okay. But also we have the committee man process, and this is the key thing. This is the thing that's going to link us together across the state, and it's going to happen overnight, in a sense, that it's going to exist. We'll have a potential group of people, again, through the committee man process. Again, in my county alone, we have 249 seats times 2, Republican and Democrat. That's 500 seats. And we have other people in other parties. They want to join in. Sure, that's more seats. So you got 500 people approximately right there. And if we can educate those people, and out of those 500 people, we can glean maybe 25 or 50 or more people that really become interested. And remember, people who become committee men are somewhat interested in giving, volunteering their time back into their community to reinstate their government, to reinstate their republic. And a lot of them belong to liberty groups, and they go with their signs and meetings and marches or whatever. Okay, so they're willing to give their time up. How much more? This is the real power. Wouldn't we want to turn in our signs and pick up the power of the committee man? Wouldn't we want to turn in our marches on Washington and take the authority and the power of the courts? Because that's what we're really looking for. We want to get to the power. There's 2 powers in this country, judicial power and political power. There is none other. If you can control your political power and your judicial power, then you control your destiny. You control your government. You control your future. Okay? So we will teach this to the committee men, these kind of things, which we should have been taught in our schools and we're not. We need to get them into our schools so our children growing up learn these things, and all of them feel a sense that they need to volunteer at some point in their lifetime, at least 2 years as a committee man, and they need to know that how to get into the courts and deal with the court system and the process and how to go through the system. So when they see an injustice or they've been injustice has been placed upon them, they can get up and defend themselves in a court of law. So these really is going to be a simple thing to do once we capture control back and give it to the people, the committee man process, start to organize and educate ourselves. And, you know, a lot of this will flow and generate and kind of be brainstormed and planned and executed from the state level, in the sense that there is one county chairman in each county for a total of 62. And those 62 county chairmen are the 62 state chairmen. And they will come together and discuss things and ideas, and they can bring it down into their counties, start to educate, start to discuss those things and motivate their counties to do these things. Someone said that with a grand jury, for instance, that there should be more than one in a county. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not. You know, I look at more like a jury pool, a grand jury pool, just like a jury pool. You know, if you've got 500 or 1,000 active people in your county, and you can get a jury pool of 50 or 60 people, at any given time, you'll always be able to find 25 people at home to be pulled together to consider a situation in their county. I would imagine in the city, of course, they'd be a lot more busy than they would in most counties. But remember, you know, how often are there jury cases, and where are they? They're always in the county seat. They're in the Supreme Court. In my case, it's Poughkeepsie. And if you go down to the courts, they're usually, you know, they'll have hearings and things, but very rare is there a jury trial going on or something. So how often does a grand jury meet to indict? You know, maybe they meet once a week. Maybe they meet once a month. I have no idea how that might work, but we have to figure that out. And I'd imagine, you know, county up in the central part of the state and deep in the farmlands, they may come together once a month. You know, a county here where I'm at in Dutchess County, you know, we may come together once a week. You go down into New York City, they may be coming together. They may need many grand juries coming together every day. Right? So we'll have to figure that out and work those details out when we understand the workload. But as far as the structure, how to put it together, how to form it, where do we get the pool of people to become these things? Well, we've already started that. That's what we're doing right here, and that's what the committee man is all about. Same thing with the jury pool. I think every committee man should sign up for the jury, to be on the jury pool. And so they get picked out when someone needs a jury of their peerage, they're available. That's it. Anybody else want to comment on that or add? Any other questions?
Yes, I got my hand up.
I don't see it.
I pressed the star and the 8.
Is that what it is, star and 8? Try it again. Let's just see if it comes up. Yeah, I don't see it.
Okay.
But anyway, then.
Okay, I pulled up the New York State Constitution, and I'm looking at Article 1, Bill of Rights, and subsection 13, no laws to be enacted except by a bill. Okay, so let's take one simple law.
Let me make a correction there, because that should say no statutes. Now, a statute can be a law. You know, you can call a statute a law as long as you realize that statute is being focused in on a bureaucrat, an elected official, a government agency, or for commercial purposes. But it cannot. Men cannot make laws for men. That's the key point. If we don't understand that, we'll never be free. You have to understand that. That has to be the basis of your mind, the foundation of your thinking. And when you go up anywhere and someone tries to apply a man-made law, it doesn't work for me. Get out of my face. It has nothing to do with me. So
hey,
we have
I'm
to have that attitude.
Percent, but nonetheless,
yep.
Article 1 of the New York State Constitution, it says, enacting clause of bills, no law to be enacted except by a bill. And this is where we get those conundrums of legislations all over the place. So if we take one of those little laws of New York State, which is a seatbelt law, how do we overcome this as common law? How do we say to...
Well, it's very simple. It's very simple. And again, the people on the front lines, it's going to be a tough fight. We're the people on the front lines. We have to be willing to do it, okay, first.
According to this...
My point, let me make the point. This may clear it up, though. You see, if you are given a ticket for a seatbelt violation, you will go one of two places, and it's usually in the town courts. In the cities, they might actually have traffic courts. Like, I know Albany has a traffic court, okay? But generally speaking, the traffic court is in the same court as the town. They'll be doing traffic things, and they'll be doing what they call criminal things and all kinds of stuff in the same court. Well, look, once you walk into a Nisi Prius court, okay, you have not been brought in there by a jury, a grand jury. You've not been indicted. Nobody has signed a written affidavit, a signed affidavit against you, accusing you of anything. None of those two things happened. You're in a Nisi Prius court. They have no power over you. They are a court created by statutes and operate and exercise the statutes. Seatbelts are statutes. They have no authority over you.
Didn't the 10th Amendment give the states power to govern themselves?
To write laws concerning bureaucrats, to control bureaucrats, not people. Nobody can control my behavior. And
no,
the Constitution can't give anyone the ability to control mine or your behavior. If I want to wear a seatbelt, I'll wear a seatbelt. I think anybody who doesn't wear a seatbelt is stupid. I think they're ignorant.
Well,
I think it's not a bright thing to do, but it's their prerogative.
But
I think a person that doesn't stop at a red light, I think should be shunned. Everybody should be angry with them.
The
you know?
Point and, is, it seems to me that the 10th Amendment gave states the right to make stupid laws, whether we like them or not.
No, they didn't. Wait a second. Hold it. Wait. The Constitution doesn't control me. I don't receive my rights by the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was written for the United States of America, not for the people. The people wrote it for the United States, and it's to put them in a box. And it gave them authority to legislate laws, but the laws to be legislated are laws to be applied. They're called statutes and codes. They're meant to be applied upon controlling government people, government officials, from getting out of line, to control commercial activities between the states and within the states. That's where the laws are. So if you are operating truly operating a motor vehicle, which is a commercial vehicle, in other words, if you're operating a vehicle that is involved in commercial activity, they have a right to control that and make laws about that, okay? But if you're driving an automobile, you're not driving a commercial vehicle. You don't need a driver's license. You can't be ticketed for passing a red light. You can't be ticketed for not having a seatbelt on. Now, of course, we are, and we're drug into the courts, and we yield to them every time. How do you plead? Well, now we consented. I plead not guilty. Now you consented. You're done. You're in the system, and you're done. Okay? If you say, hey, look, you ain't got the authority to rule over me, you don't have the jurisdiction, I'm out of here. Again, enough people do it. Once they get pushed into the corner and is forced upon them, and they understand that they don't have jurisdiction, then at that point, anybody comes up and says, jurisdiction, they walk out of the courtroom. You don't have jurisdiction, they walk out of the courtroom. Okay, that's what it's all about. And eventually, you know, someone will say, not even go into court, and they'll try to come out and arrest them. Then they'll sue them under U.S. Codes 42 and 18, which is criminal acts and civil acts.
But the thing is, the New York State, what is this? New York State Constitution gives senators and the assembly the power to make laws.
But not for me. They cannot make a law to control my behavior. You may want to be imprisoned by that. You may want to accept that. That's your prerogative. You could be a citizen.
I don't want to.
I'm not a citizen.
But that one of their definitions is to make law. Okay, then by your standard, I like your standard, by the way, what laws can they be making?
They can't make the law of the land. They can only make statutes. Here's a statute, okay? If a judge goes beyond his authority, okay? In other words, he doesn't have an authority to do something to you, and he goes beyond that authority that he has over you. So he goes out of his authority, and he acts as if he's still a judge. In other words, he's in costume. He's in disguise. He's got a judge's robe on, okay? And he's in costume or he's disguised. They apply something to you that he doesn't have the authority to apply to you, and you get damaged by that. You then exercise U.S. Code 42, I think it's 243, 244, and 246, and U.S. Code 18, well, I think 18 is the 243, 46. And then there's U.S. Code 42, which I think is 1983, 84, and 86. You exercise those codes against him, because now that is those codes can put that man in jail for up to 10 years and in certain cases life or even death, okay? It can fine him, and you have the right to get a civil lawsuit and sue him unlimitedly. You can take his house away, okay, under those codes. See, to him, that's law, and that was legislated by the legislators. That's the law they can do. But they can't legislate law against the people. They cannot control your behavior, your life. Okay? What is it that Jefferson said? Jefferson said, "I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending to much liberty than to those attending to too small a degree of it." So when they go out and they try to make a law that you can't carry a gun or you can't own a certain gun, well, they can apply that on their citizens because their citizens are willing to apply to that and they're willing to go to jail for that. They're willing to pay the fine. They're willing not to fight. Unfortunately, I've come to the realization we're always going to have citizens. You know, I'd like to eradicate that, but I realize it's an impossibility. We're always going to have people who are going to want mommy and daddy, and it'll be what they'll be, and they'll be caught in these silly traps. But as for me, nah, get out of my face. I want to carry my gun, that's my business, it's not yours. I want an assault rifle or a shotgun, that's my business, it's not yours. Get out of my face. I want a long barrel or a short barrel, get out of my face. You want to go find that guy and he's not going to fight you? Well, you know, I'll tell him, hey, why are you letting him do that to you? But if that's what he wants to do or she wants to do, that's their business too. If a guy wants to stick a needle in his arm and kill himself, hey, I'll do everything I can to talk him out of it. I'll tell him how bad it is. I'll try to convince him another way. But it's his prerogative. If he ends up killing himself by sticking that needle in his arm, well, he was exercising his right. You know, this sounds cold sometimes. It sounds a little harsh. But, you know, once you
are... No, you know what?
That
you know what it is? There's so many... It's not that people want to be slaves. It's just that you get zoning boards that come and waive their own... I mean, even the little town towns can make statutes. You can't do this, you can't do that. So where does this...
And they can't execute them against me. They can execute them against anybody who will allow them. When an inspector comes out and gives you a ticket, the zoning board inspector, whatever they call these people, they come out and they give you a ticket. And you go down to their silly little courtroom, and they say, hey, you're accused of violating code 6732, whatever it is, and you did this, that, and the other thing. How do you plead? Oh, well, I plead not guilty. Now, you just consented to their court system, and you're going to be tried by them. You're probably going to be found guilty because everybody's found guilty and gets their fine or goes to jail. And that's the way it is, and that's what you accept. When I go to that courtroom, you've been found that you violated the code 632572, whatever that is. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Judge. You have no authority over me. You have no jurisdiction. And that's what last week's form was all about. I just put up a new one, updated it. I will come to court. The court will have that before I get there. I will have a copy with me.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you now, Gerard. Yep.
The issue here is, who are we talking to?
Giselle.
Michelle?
Giselle.
The issue here is there's no injured party. You see, our system was supposed to be set up for that if a man didn't want to pay a tax, he didn't have to pay any taxes by not participating in that activity. And the other thing is you need an injured party, and the state cannot be the injured party because the state is the created, not the creator. I mean, they have teeth to do certain things. That's true. They have what's known as eclipse sovereignty. Otherwise, there would be men institute governments to protect the weak from the strong. But that's on constitutional issues. When they start making a bunch of little laws that they're using as revenue collection against them, if you're a sovereign people, John is right. Those laws do not pertain to you. Where's the injured party? Even if they catch you doing 100 miles an hour, there's no injured party unless you did something where you went 100 miles an hour down a sidewalk with people on it. You know, if the king has a Maserati...
Well, or if you ran down a road that they're suggesting 65 miles, they say, hey, this is a safe speed to go, and you go 100 and you get into an accident, then you could be held seriously liable. And under common law, you will pay a lot more dearly than you will under civil law.
They have taken all these little stupid things and used them to enslave us and bring us into this system.
Right.
And we go in and we plea bargain, and we're so happy that they gave us a $280 fine and they didn't put it on our insurance company so that the insurance company can penalize us again for the same so-called crime. They punish you about three times for the same crime, which is illegal. And we're willing to go in there and plead it down to parking on a pavement or some other such nonsense to get away without having a mark on our license. This is what they do. You know, it really is bread and circuses, because they got you thinking about the mark on your license, which you don't need the freaking license in the first place if you knew what you were doing.
My confusion comes in from the fact that the 10th Amendment gave the states the right to...
The 10th Amendment gave the states the right to certain things, but never the right to create any kind of a law that controls the behavior of the people.
Okay.
The people gave the power. You know, the people give it and the people take it. And if the state misunderstands or misinterprets that power, well, the people will correct that, okay? You know, one of the things I did, and people may disagree with this, and we may discuss this, and we may change this, or people may insert it themselves. It's up to them. I don't, you know, we got to do what we got to do. But I'm sure we can come to an agreement if we go another route. You know, when we take our pledge to protect the Constitution, to keep the Constitution, to uphold the Constitution, to enforce the Constitution, you know, everything, when you go into office, we wrote our oath. And I purposely only did the U.S. Constitution. I did not say the New York State Constitution. Now, if you take an oath in New York, usually they have the oath for the New York and New York Constitution. And if you go into a federal government, you have the U.S. Constitution. But you see, the New York State Constitution is subjected to the U.S. Constitution. And there's a lot of stuff in the New York Constitution I don't know that I agree with. Okay? So I don't know that I want to take an oath to protect that. I mean, and they don't really have a Bill of Rights laid out like the U.S. Constitution, but nevertheless, it's the U.S. Constitution that governs us all. It was well put together. Yeah, it may not be perfect, but I'll tell you what, definitely the Bill of Rights, they don't cover enough, maybe. Some people said, well, we probably would have been better off without a Bill of Rights, or maybe it shouldn't have this, that, or the other thing. But ultimately, it's the Bill of Rights that really has kept the government under lock and key for a long time. They're getting around it, though.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop it. You see, we stop it by doing what? Just say no.
I think
I
think Gerard clarified it when he said that you need an injured party, and where's the injured party just because I don't wear a seatbelt? It's a perceived injured party that I'm actually paying a fine on, a perceived party that may never even exist.
No, that injured party would be the insurance company. If you get hurt and they got to pay out your thing, that's who made that bill.
Yeah.
The corporation went in there and pushed the legislation, and that's why it's in there, because in this country we have corporations running the government. We're fascists, and that's where you get your legislation from, because it furthers their bottom line, and that's what it's about.
So the bottom line is you have to have an injured party for any of these laws to be valid that they're making.
For every injury, there must be a remedy. That's a common law maxim. Okay? Every injury, there must be a remedy. So if I'm walking down the street and you punch me in the face, I have been injured. Now I must have a remedy for that. The law must provide a remedy. And I could take you to court, and I might say, I want you to go to jail for 10 years. Okay? You may find it hard to get a jury to agree with that, but you may say, I want this guy to pay my hospital bills, and I think he should be in jail for 30 years. I think you can convince almost any jury to agree with that. Okay? So you have to be reasonable, of course. But the point is, that's an injury. If there is no injury, there is no crime. I'm walking down the street. I've got a gun on my hip. Maybe I keep it covered, but I bend over, I reach out, and it exposes itself. Someone sees it. Okay, they come and arrest me. Wait, I didn't injure nobody. What are they doing arresting? It's my right to have a gun. Okay?
Because technically a speeding is a violation.
Who sets the speeding laws? Sometimes the highway is 55, sometimes it's 65, sometimes it's even more. You go to places, I think Germany, they have an unlimited, they have the highway that's unlimited. You can go 100 miles an hour, and they don't have any more problems than we do. They have slow lanes, they have fast lanes. Some people feel more comfortable at 65. Some people may be able to breeze on a highway at 85. I think it would be irresponsible for someone to run 85 miles an hour down a street with lights on it with children in the streets and so on, they're going to hurt someone. They're going to damage someone eventually. That's going to happen. And then they will pay dearly. And if they kill someone, they may lose their life over that. You know, under common law, you know, going back 100 years, if you were a horse, you stole someone's horse. I mean, people depended on their horse for their livelihood, for their life. You stole their horse, you could get the death penalty.
My point was,
you know,
to see that
break
not
into
all
someone's house. It's a horror. Just think, you're at your home, you're with your children. It's the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, someone breaks into your house. I mean, the fear. The horror of someone breaking into your house, the assault upon, that potentially could be, and under common law, it could be the death penalty. You know, common, and it's all up to the people. It's up to the jury. That person never should have broken into your house. You know, my daughter has a heart condition. If someone broke into our house, maybe she'd go into a cardiac arrest. Okay? It could be a serious thing. So just any person, an elderly or any person could get frightened to death. Who knows? I don't know. But the point is, you see, there's an injury here. And common law, it's what you can convince the 12 people to agree upon. Okay? You know, Thornton makes this point, and it's a very good point. He says, I have a law in my realm. Nobody comes in my presence with pink shoes on. If you come into my presence with pink shoes, it's the death penalty. So I'm going to take you to court. I'm going to sue you, and I'm going to call for the death penalty. Now, the person's going to say, wait a second, you can't do that, and he's going to get a jury. There's no way you're going to convince a jury. Of course, it's not going to go that far. It's a ridiculous story, but the point is the point. You can't convince a jury to do something like that. You're going to convince the jury, 12 people, you're going to convince them on something that is right. It's up to them to decide. They're going to discuss it and argue it and so on and so forth. 30 days in jail and paying for my hospital bills might be reasonable. You know, they may turn around and say, hey, I think he should get 45. He did this before. Or he should get 60 because he did this before. Or maybe he should only get 15 for whatever reason they come. That's their decision. It's a jury of their peers. And that's how our system is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to ride down the highway at 80 miles an hour, that's your prerogative. Okay? Even though the suggested speed is 65. I know a lot of highways you're better off at 85, in my opinion. You know, rush hour, you'll not get away with that unless you're weaving in and out. And that could be considered as something, you hurt somebody, you're going to be in trouble. So anyway, we have this, you know, liberty requires being, what I'm looking for, mature, okay? We have to have some maturity. We have to realize mommy and daddy isn't here to take care of us. We're mature people. We need to do it. People, unfortunately, citizens want to go to a judge, and they want to get beat up, and they want to get their $250 fine, and they thank the judge and genuflect as they walk out and pay the clerk, and they're very happy campers with that.
Not really. I think The lawyers and the judges waive the penal code in front of them, waive the violations, and because they are law-abiding people and they have a legislator who wrote that law, they take it as, well, this is the law of the land and I must obey. And
right.
Basically, what you're saying is, nope, you are basically being misled here.
Right, but you're not going to convince everybody of this. You're going to get people, look, I've had arguments with people, and I don't even bother arguing. I said, look, this isn't worth arguing if you're not going to see the point. You know, you can't have no laws out there on the road. People have to stop at stoplights. And yeah, I said, yeah, they do, but you don't have to force them to do it. Everyone will do it because it's the right thing to do.
And they want to maintain their own safety too, actually.
Exactly. And we're going to teach our children that. We're going to be taught in school. Look, we do nice things often because that's the way we were raised, to be nice and do nice things. It's nice to be nice. That's where I come from. I grew up in a neighborhood, in a place where it's nice to be nice.
Right.
I was nice to my neighbors. I was polite. I held doors open for people. I lived in an apartment building down in the Bronx. And, you know, an old woman coming into the, I knew all these people. I'd help them with their packages and walk up three flights of stairs with them. And,
listen, they don't,
you know,
the cops don't even want to do their job in the first place. If we had, if you ran a stop sign and you hit somebody, it's the cop's job to ticket the guilty party. And you can, and that helps set the fault in even in a common law thing. But they don't even want to do that. They just want to, they want to have tickets and have everybody plead to them and make money. They're not interested in doing investigations to see who was right or who was wrong.
Right.
You know. And I mean, I've run into that. They really don't feel like investigating anything. They'd rather just write a bunch of tickets and let people go to court and plead. They'll write tickets all the way around rather than write one ticket to put guilt on a party. But you know, that party would be the defendant for the injured party, because he caused the accident. The cop witnessed it and wrote the ticket. And that ticket is basically like an affidavit of the cop saying, yes, I saw what he did to this guy. I attest to that. So we wouldn't have people running stop signs. Just the same way we don't have the Wild Wild West when everybody gets guns, crime goes down, people aren't out there shooting each other. It's all a bunch of bull crap. And it's always that they always got to scare you into this business. And like our forefathers said, they said, you know, many an injustice and many a right is lost under the guise of necessity. Oh, it's necessary. We can't let people run around with no rules now, can we?
And let me tell you how bad it is. And if I understand this correctly, there's a case out in Niagara County that we're helping some people with. And if I understand everything that's going on out there correctly, they have a courtroom. They have two judges, one on the right, one on the left, operating at the same time because they have that much business. And they have so much business, I presume, because people have to actually wait outside for an hour or so until their cases are called and they can come in. Okay? So that's how busy they are in that particular town, making all kinds of revenue and money. You know the judge is getting a piece of that. We've heard about some legislation that permits the judges to get pieces of things, at least on the federal level. It's really crazy. If the people understood what's going on, hey, we got to stop all this craziness. But, you know, this is what's happening. I mean, you've got two judges in the same courtroom going through cases at the same time in order to keep up with all of the arrests and the summonses and all the stuff going on. That's ridiculous. And the United States, we think we're the freest people. We are the most suppressed people. Of all of the 50 states, New York is the most suppressed state of all the states, okay? But of the world, the United States is more suppressed than any other country of the world because we have more people in prison than any other country in the entire world, at least to our population. I don't know if I could say that per numbers. That may be the case, but at least per population. That's insane. That's insane. So anyway, if people want to be servants, they want to be, subjects to their state, then that's what they'll be. It's up to them, but not I.
Okay.
And again, I want to say one more thing here, that anybody, if we are the front line, it's up to us. We're learning about this stuff, you know, and some of us may not be capable of doing it yet, but 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, you can be. You work with groups, okay? No one should be on their own. We should be working with groups, and we should be working together, you know? And so if we are doing this in our counties and in our towns, once we do it the first time, the people behind us doing it, and we have to do it again, it'll be a lot easier. It's going to be accepted. Believe me, when we beat some of these people up, judicially speaking, the judges, the prosecutors, and the bailiffs. I realize now we have to sue the bailiffs, too, because they're allowing this crime to be committed in their presence, okay? And the sheriffs, okay? Once we start suing these people, believe me, they're going to be talking to other sheriffs and other judges and other bailiffs. And when we come back into their court, they're going to fear the people. When a government fears the people, we have liberty. They're going to fear us. They're going to say, we're not going to mess with this guy. We don't have jurisdiction. Case dismissed. Goodbye. And the other guy here says, wait, you don't have jurisdiction over me, too. Well, yeah, you're right. Case dismissed. Goodbye. Hey, me, too. Hey, me, too. Hey, me, too. Hey, me, too. We've got to get to that point. But it can only get there if we first do it. if there's no one up there doing it for the people to see. I was told that in this courtroom that I'm talking about, and I hope my information is correct, but this is what I was told, is that during the court case, when our guy came up and started arguing with the judge, telling me, you ain't got jurisdiction, you don't have authority to do that, the court case to the right of him, or to the left, whatever it was, literally stopped, judge and all, to watch this case. Everybody in the courtroom was silent and listening to this case. Why? Because someone was finally sticking it to them. You don't have the right. You don't have the authority. Who are you people? And that's how we have to do it. And if we're not willing to do it, then we don't deserve liberty. And if we think someone else is going to do it for us, then you don't deserve liberty. And you're not going to have it. That's not the mentality that we need to rebuild our country, republic. Everybody has to get up and do it. We have to back each other up. So every county, you know, you should be 3, 4, 5, 6, a dozen people getting together, however often they think they should, to discuss and learn and plan, and then execute court cases that they think are necessary, whether it be personal or whether it be against the state because they see some injustice and they want to fix it. That's what we're doing. There should be a group in every county doing this, and we intend on hopefully getting to that point using the committee men as the springboard for that. So, but we need to get up and do it. And one other thing, I'd just like to make an announcement. A while back, I just don't remember who this was, I had a discussion. Someone called me on the phone. We were talking, and they knew of some lawyers or a lawyer who I believe had a license at some point, gave up their license and turned to common law, but is operating under common law. I think it was down south somewhere. And they did tie me into that person. They sent me an email with their phone number and stuff, also made contact with that person because they were looking for other people who might be interested in opening up common law firms in other states. And, of course, we're interested in doing that. And so, but in any event, I intended on getting back to that person, and I couldn't find the email. I couldn't find the phone number. So whoever that is, if you're here in this room tonight or if you listen to this tape at a later time, maybe you can give me a call. My phone number's on the site. I know you got my phone number. Or you can talk to me right here in the room. I need that information. But anyway, move on. Anybody else? Mic is open.
John, good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Fanny?
I'm okay. I have a question. I've been listening to the discussion. What happens if you end up in one of the villages or the small towns that we live in? How do you let's say, even if they throw some local laws, noise,
right,
or whatever, what do you tell the local judge when you go to that courtroom?
Well, that's a very good question. That's a nisi prius court. It's a court of statute created by statute. It has nothing to do with me. I don't belong there. When they try to pull me in, they're hijacking me. And I'll go in there, and I'll let them know, you know. And once they try to take control of me, say, I got to come back again, then it's time to let them know that you are now taking constructive custody of me, and that's kidnapping. Now they're not going to get it at first. It's going to take a little while, and you know, okay, you go a couple of times. You know, those on the front line, we're going to have to deal with it a little bit. But what I did is we've been through this enough now that we've really formulated a plan. And I think it's a pretty darn good plan. I think we're covering all the bases. And if we've missed anything, we will tweak it and we'll share it with everybody. But if you go up to newyorkcommitteeman.org,
right,
and you click on judicial process and then click on common law. When you come down in common law below the second video, it says generic answer to town court. Click here. And you can also listen to episode 8, which we discussed.
But it says the common law documents?
This is the common
law.
Common
law.
No, this is, yeah, you go to common law. Let me go back, okay? NewYorkCommitteeman.org, click
yes,
on judicial process on the left. Then
right,
on that page, you'll see common law. There's a bunch of tabs. Click on
right,
common law.
Right. Right.
Come down a little bit under the second video. And if you don't see this, refresh the page a few times because, you know, every time you update, if you've been out here recently, you may see the old page. So refresh your page. And you'll see it says generic answer to town court. Click here. Then it also says, and that will give you an 8-page paper, which is your response to their accusations. And all you have to do, it's very simple, and all you have to do is change the name of the court to whatever court you're going to and put your name in there everywhere you need to. And then you sign it, and you give it to the court, and that's your argument. Now, I'm in the middle right now. I'm just about almost done. I'm writing instructions for this, which is going to be right underneath this. And the instructions will be detailed on what to do next, if this happens, that happens here, what to say in court, what not to say in court. And remember, you have paperwork with you. When they say something, you can look at your paperwork and find what you have to say and then read it right off your paperwork. It's very easy because really you don't want to say much. Most of what you want to say is, I object, Your Honor. I object, Your Honor. But why do you object? It's in my paperwork, Your Honor. Have you read my paperwork, Your Honor? Why haven't you read my paperwork, Your Honor? Why doesn't the court take a recess so you can read my paperwork? Why am I in this court and I'm with you and you haven't read my paperwork? You know, when you're going to make a plea, you can say, yeah, I'm ready to plead, Your Honor, okay? And you give them the paperwork, okay? And your plea is that you don't have jurisdiction over me, all right? So we have that. Now,
so if he says who does, then what do you say?
Certain things, huh?
John, if the judge says who does, then what you say?
If the judge says what?
If you said you don't have jurisdiction over me.
Right, well, that's what the instructions are all about.
Okay.
I'm writing instructions. I hope to have it up in the next day or so, definitely by next week. I'm pressing now. I'm going to try to get it done tomorrow because I'd like to take this with me to a meeting I'm going to tomorrow. But hopefully I'll get it done. But I'm going to get it up there, and it'll be right with this. It'll be I may revamp this in a way, you know, click here for the template, click here for instructions. But there are other things you could do. There is a process of reporting these people to the judicial committee, okay? There are three judicial committees here in the state of New York. There's one in the Western, one in the Northern, and one in the Southern. And we give that information. We have a template, okay? And that template is going to explain your case, and it doesn't matter what you're arrested for. If you were arrested for having a gun without a permit, if you were ticketed or fined for a parking ticket or passing a red light, or if you were ticketed or fined for having a sign too big in your front yard, I mean, I don't care what it is. It's the same. It's generic. You don't have to change any words except for the name of the court and your name, because we're not going to argue the point, and we'll tell them in the instructions. Don't argue the merit of the case. It's irrelevant. They don't have the authority to hear it. You're not arguing the merit of the case. You're arguing their jurisdiction. We also learned a little trick recently. We learned this guy. There was this guy talking about this, and he came up with a great idea. And he says, don't challenge the jurisdiction and give them the option to deciding whether they have jurisdiction. Forget that. Challenge their jurisdiction and let it know that they are barred from dealing with this case upon coming after you, after your person. They are barred by the Constitution. They are barred by case law. And so we rewrote this since last week around this idea that the court is barred. We're not asking the judge to rule anything. Also, we discovered the game that they play is they conspire with the prosecutor and they start working out all these things and ideas, and they always come up with the same ideas. You know, they don't know what to do, but they seem to always come up with the same ideas. Well, we're getting that right in the beginning, and we're letting them know to the judge and the prosecutor, you two guys get together and discuss this case in any way, shape, or form. That's conspiracy, and that's malicious prosecution, and we're going to sue you and chase you for criminal activities. Okay? We're putting it right in the paperwork. Don't do it. If the judge is going to talk to the prosecutor about this case, you better call me in. And you'll find, and we've seen this too, the judge and the prosecutor will get up and go into the back room to talk in the middle of your case or right before your case. Well, you know what? When that judge gets up and the prosecutor gets up to go into that back room, you move right along with them. You'll be stopped, but you insist on the fact that these guys cannot get in here and talk about my case without me present, because that's the law. It's you know, they're not permitted to do that. So we'll also we'll give you a form on how to make the report, again, generic, to this this committee, this judicial committee. It's 11 people that meet and they look at cases. We're also, we put this form in such a way that puts them on the spot because we start off with U.S. code. And there's one U.S. code, I think it's 42-1986, I think it's the 86 one, where it says anybody that's an officer or in power that is aware of a crime and doesn't do anything to stop it or prevent it is guilty of the same. Okay, so we start our complaint right with that. So we're putting these 11 people on notice. You better get down here and fix this thing because we're being assaulted right now as you're reading this. We're being assaulted, and it's up to you to come down here and fix it now. So that's one pressure you're going to put on the court. The second pressure, which you might want to wait till the second or third hearing, what you'll find is you're coming in, they're asking you to plead, you're refusing to plead, they don't know what to do. Then they set another conference date, they come back, and they're trying to get power over you, they're still trying to get you to plead. You're focusing in on jurisdiction, objection, and they still don't know what to do. Then you come back a third time and a fourth time, and at some point they try to put an end to it or they succumb to your pushing back, one or the other. In this case that we're dealing with right now, the judge made it clear that the next court case coming in, he's going to decide whether he's going to arrest him or give him, you know, a bail. He's going to decide on bail, okay? So he's trying to tell this guy, I'm ready to arrest you, okay? Now is the time this guy's got to push real hard back to the court to prevent that from happening. You don't want to get to that point, okay? If you're there, maybe at most, I would say twice. I'd come to two conferences. Me, I wouldn't go to no conference. That's my personal opinion. I'm going to court once. I'm going to tell him he ain't got the power. He's going to tell me, well, okay, we're going to set another conference date up. Then I'm going to say, well, Your Honor, I have no choice but to execute what I said I was going to execute in the papers that you decided you didn't want to read. So when I leave this courtroom today, I'm now going to do things that's going to affect every officer in this court from the bailiff to the judge. And then I'll leave the courtroom. And then I will execute everything. I'll execute what I just told you about making the complaint to the judicial committee. And then I'm going to go file a complaint under the two U.S. codes, 42 and 18, plus a civil suit, okay, in the Supreme Court in my county. And I'm going to haul in the judge. I'm going to haul in the prosecutor. I'm going to bring in the bailiff. If there's sheriffs involved or a constable, state police, town police, whatever, whoever's involved, they're all coming down. And we're going to meet in my courtroom now. And that's how I'll do it. Now, people might want to hold off one or two times the conferences, and hopefully the judge will work it out. The pressure from the committee will work on them, you know, whatever you want to do. But you have to do what you want to do. Now, we will write up everything for this case, including the Supreme Court complaint, okay? And people now, they have to get educated on how to deal with that. And, of course, we'll assist anyone or we'll know people maybe in the area that can help assist, that can come down to court with them. Because you should be working in a group. Nobody should be doing this alone. You should be tapping into a group. I go to court, right. I better have at least two or three witnesses with me that's going to write affidavits of everything going on in that courtroom. And that becomes your ammunition, your proof in your court case against them.
Mine.
Is someone talking? Hello?
Yeah, somebody's talking. I don't know who.
Anyway, mic's open. You want to say some more, Manny?
David?
No, it's very interesting. I mean, and it's fascinating all that you're saying. I think probably in a lot of backyards over here, that could work very well. And that could make a great impact.
Let me tell you what I'm suggesting and some of the things we're putting into these instructions. First of all, I work with a group, okay? And so I got to get together with this group now because we're putting this together now. I'm going to write papers up for myself, and it'll be generic. I'll leave open. The only thing I'll leave open is the name of the court. My name, everything will be in there, okay? The only thing I'll leave open is the court and the date, okay? And I'll throw three copies of that into my glove box. If I'm ever arrested, I'll tell the officer, you know, grab those papers in that glove box because I'm going to need them in court, okay, for my arraignment. And either he'll do it or not. He may do it, he may not. But the first thing you're going to get is you're going to get a phone call, okay? And you're going to want to call one of the people in your group. Hey, I got a problem, okay? And I've been arrested. I'm going to be arraigned down at this court. He should be calling or she should be calling the other people in your group. You should have 2, 3, 4, 5 people heading down to the courtroom. And they should already have in their possessions papers that you put together that they're keeping in their file. Should you need it, they can grab it and take it with you, and you do the same for them and other. We all have each other's, okay?
Right.
Now you go to court, and you're in the arraignment. Your people come in. You got 4, 5, 3, 2 witnesses, whatever. They're all writing down, taking notes what's going on in the courtroom. They bring your papers. They give it to you. You serve a paper to the judge, a paper to the prosecutor. You got a paper to work off as, you know, to be able to speak. And you got your witnesses there listening and taking notes. They do affidavits when they leave. You do affidavits. You put your court to case the, and you're going to kick ass in this court if we're organized. But you see, this is how we take the country back. This is how we take our judicial process back. We already laid out the plan how we take our political process back, and we're about ready to do that too. We're about ready to get some decisions soon on our court of record case. People have got to step now. You know, someone told me recently, they said the reason why you don't have that many people, you know, following along and doing what I'm doing, because I'm asking them, is because I say that everything else you're doing is irrelevant. This is the only way. Well, they've misunderstood what I said. I've never really said that. I have said, and I've said it 10,000 times, you know, you can go wave signs any way you want. It's not going to change anything. You can go write all the letter making you want. You can get anyone you want elected. You can walk anyone's papers. All that stuff that we're doing as Liberty Group. You can do all that stuff day in and day out, and it's not going to change a thing. It might slow a few things down, but it does have a purpose. It has the ability to build your group up. If you go to a thing like a gun rally last Saturday and another one coming up in another week or two, a couple of weeks, okay, that'll rally us together. It'll make us feel good. It'll help build our numbers. It'll help bring us together. It'll help organize more. It'll bring more people to the meeting. All those things are good. If you're doing it thinking you're going to change the government, well, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you because it's not going to work. Not that you shouldn't do it. We should do it. I do it. I'm going to the next one up in Albany, okay, because I think it's good and get more word out there and build up the ranks, okay? But I'm not doing it because I think it's going to solve the problem, because it's not. You know what's going to solve the problem? What we're talking about right here in this room, getting involved in the political process without the politics, getting involved in the judicial process without the statutes. That's what's going to save this country, and it could do it overnight if people just realize it and step up and do it.
Now, you know, I have one last question. I know that it's getting late. How did the little town supervisor and boards start writing these statutes and laws and expect everybody to obey? Is it out of ignorance of the people, or is it abuse of power
ignorance of the people? Let me tell you
officials.
Something. Let me tell you something. I've seen some things on TV up in Alaska, okay, which is a lot of wild country. And I stop and watch some of these cop things, you know, the state trooper things. And some of these people tell the cops where to go, you know. Some of these people just say, the cops, get out of here, go away from me, you know. And the cops respect that to some degree. They're very careful up there because the people don't want to be bothered, all right. That's because there's a lot more wilderness and they're more in the wild part of the country. But what happened here is we've been educated, so we think. We've been actually programmed. We're not educated.
Correct.
Our education, which is the programming, has changed little by little from generation to generation. They remove more and more. This is the argument I'm hearing. I'm beside myself in this. I'm hearing an argument very deeply lately. I've seen this on TV, on educational programs. I've heard people bring this up. They say that Thomas Jefferson did not write the Declaration of Independence. It is extremely important for this New World Order movement is to destroy Thomas Jefferson and take him away from that particular paper. Because that, without Thomas Jefferson, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we had George Washington. It doesn't matter that we had Benjamin Franklin. It doesn't matter that we had John Adams. It doesn't matter we had any of those people. Without Thomas Jefferson, we would not have America. We would not have a Declaration of Independence. We wouldn't have what we have today. He was the voice of freedom, okay? Now, George Washington, of course, played an important role, too. Without a George Washington, we wouldn't have won the war, okay? So, you know, all these men played an important role. But I want to make a point. Without the voice of freedom, without the voice of liberty, which is Thomas Jefferson, we would not have a Constitution. And when Thomas Jefferson wrote that Declaration of Independence, okay, he was asked to write that. And by the way, Thomas Jefferson was not a great speaker. He was a very, very soft-spoken individual, and no one could ever hear him whenever he got onto a podium. Okay, he just didn't have that voice to put out. But he was a thinker, and he wrote things. And what he wrote was indelible. I mean, we have it today. And he understood, if you read his autobiography, which we do have up on online, by the way, it should be with our founding documents, I think. You read his autobiography, he said that, you know, when he died, he wanted certain things done. He wanted his tombstone to say certain things. And one of the things he wanted his tombstone to say is, "Here lies the man who authored the Declaration of Independence." Now, why did he do that? He didn't do that because he wanted everyone to know that, because look at me or whatever. He didn't do it for any purpose to puff up himself. He did it because he understood how important his role was in the Revolution. He understood his letters between him and Adams, his letters between many others, all the other papers and things that he wrote, and his involvement in his own state constitution. He knew he was the voice of America, and it was important. The Declaration of Independence was the pinnacle of our freedom. It was the paper that sparked America up. It was important for his name to be on that so that they would look at that. Well, let's see who this man is, and then you'll see what freedom is, okay? And he knew that, and that's why he did that. And that's why they're trying to separate Jefferson from the Declaration of Independence. You know, he's the guy that said that the Second Amendment, I forget how he put it, maybe someone here knows, you'll need the Second Amendment when they try to take away the First or something like that. Anyway. I'm done. If anybody else wants to add or correct or say anything.
Basically, I think you answered the question. So it's because of our ignorance and acceptance of what they put in front of us, that we really should not actually obey all these little mandates that they put at the local level in our little town.
When I was a kid, there was a couple of bullies. One bully in particular, a guy named Norman, he bullied me all the time. You know, and I was very young. I was a very small kid when I was young. And I was just run away. But as I got a little older and I had to deal with certain things and I had a bully, and I stood up to the bully. You know, as long as you don't stand up to the bully, they're going to keep pushing for more and more and more and more. The moment you step up and say no, that's it. It stops, okay? Yeah, you might have to get into a scrap. It may be a little bit of an uphill battle, but it stops, okay? And that's the way of life. This government is pushing, pushing, pushing. You know, everybody's complaining about the gun laws. What are we going to do? We can't do it. Mommy, Daddy, stop. Please don't take our guns. Screw them. Look at, just say no. Just say no.
Right.
And how do we say no to the guns? Okay, yeah, I agree. I'm not calling for martyrs. Go get a put on a gun and walk down the street without a permit. And, you know, I'm not saying any of those things, okay? But what I am saying is draw the line on the smaller things. Draw the line on traffic court. Draw the line on some town code that you break. Draw the line. No, you don't have authority. You see, once you stop them on those little things, then when they go to the big things, they're going to be stopped right there too, because they know they don't have the authority. It's that simple.
Hello?
Yeah, who's online?
I think I got a little bit connected. There's a little static.
Yeah, who's this?
Oh, hey, how you doing? This is I'm showing up as Gene Art in the chat.
Okay.
You're a New York guy, right?
Right. What's your name?
My real name? Gene.
So your first name is good. Gene.
No, yeah, Gene. My real name is Gene.
How you doing, Gene? I'm
good. Check it out. Look, everything that you're saying, okay, a lot of the stuff that, and I'm not a legal expert, you know, per se at all. You know, I've been trying to get into this and the history of the country and, you know, understanding the way things really are. But I think everybody should read, and I called in on another show last night on Blog Talk Radio. I had this book for a while. It's called War Powers Under the Constitution of the United States. Okay, it was written in at the time of the Civil War. The gentleman's name who wrote the book was William Whiting. He was the special war counsel to the President Lincoln during the War Powers of the Constitution, and they appointed him to that post based on writings that he made in periodicals. He was a lawyer. He was very influential when he went into court. You know, they used to call it Whiting's Court at the time. But he was drawn into the Lincoln administration, and he advised the president on the war powers of the Constitution. And it's something I think that everybody should know, because even though what you're talking about on your show and, you know, and some other legal talk shows and stuff like that, you know, it's all valid to a certain degree, you know, but you're arguing from a perspective under a peacetime government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what we are under, really since Washington, Washington used the War Powers Clauses in like 1790, 1789 to bring the Judiciary Acts and the First Bank of the United States. But really steadily since 1933, you know, consistently.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and this is what we are really under. We're really under a military jurisdiction.
Well, that's what they say.
That's the way it is.
I understand. You're absolutely correct. I'm not going
to
argue
with
you. You are right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. That will continue as long as we allow it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The War Powers Clauses, let me explain something to you. You could look this up in Black Bouvier's 1856 dictionary.
Yep, I got them both.
Okay.
I got Black's too.
Yeah, I have all of them. There's a website. His name is johnwadmore.net, and I'll give you the spelling, J-O-H-N-W-A-D. EMORRE.net.
WAD what?
Wadmore. WADE.
Yeah.
MORRE.net.
Okay.
Now, the guy's probably a Nazi, white supremacist, or something like that. But, you know, what I learned when I'm going out and getting information is that I can go out and get information, but not stand with anybody's political ideology.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he has on that site.
Well,
I downloaded
that site
about 75.
If he is a problem, and they're taking
no. You know, screw his political beliefs. I'm talking about he has on his site, legal dictionaries and maxims at law from 1701 through like 1928.
Right.
And the Blacks and Bouvier's and all the different maxims at law. And you know, some of the dictionaries are written in Latin, so, and they go back to 1701. But, you know, what I did, I downloaded them, and, you know, I put them all to disk. And every once in a while, I just go through them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know, the common law is where we should be at, even though I have read that people hated the common law in England because it was under the king. And not the people's common law.
I'd like to just make a correction there. You're right.
It's a good conversation on the show.
The
you know, I'm not here to knock out anybody's knees.
No. But I just want to correct some things here. And so history is, you're right on what you're saying. But you see, the king was a good thing. The whole process that they set up was a good thing and worked well. Our founding fathers, when they were trying to figure things out, they had to be torn between that, and Washington was big on this. We can't have a king. And everybody agreed. So the only conclusion in order for us to be sovereign is that everyone becomes a king. That's the big experiment. This is the really big experiment.
See, I disagree there.
Never before has this happened.
I disagree there a little bit with you.
Okay.
I look at If you look at the rules of English language, okay, when they state in the Constitution, right from the get-go, we the people, and you look at the rules of capitalization, it really only means a specific group of people. It doesn't mean the people in the
it's
state.
It's the free men. It doesn't. I agree. Look, you can't get everyone in the world to agree on this. But, you know, small groups of people control things, and it's much better, of course, for the free people to control things and welcome anybody
free?
Else that wants to be
they
free.
They always had citizens. They always had...
Right, that's what I'm saying. Same thing when you join AAA.
Because you can't...
It could be,
the people of
AAA.
People by nature, unfortunately, want mommy and daddy, and so we got to give them that, too. So we, you know, the United States has subjects. It has people. I mean, it has subjects, citizens. The 14th Amendment, of course, the enemy wrote the 14th Amendment to bring them into
Lincoln's,
subjects.
Lincoln's communist and Marxist. Yeah, they wrote the Republican Party platform and the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, whatever. But the bottom line is that the 14th Amendment is something that that brought the people. Into subjection to the United States.
Well, the
okay.
You know, I've heard that the 13th Amendment freed slaves and the 14th Amendment made slaves of everyone.
All the 14th Amendment did is move slaves to the ownership of private citizens and moved it into the federal government. That's all.
Well, it gave everybody equal status. See, that
well,
that
not,
could
not
be
everyone.
A status
not everyone.
The
not everyone, because
yeah,
I'm
did.
Not...
That's what
I'm
they
not,
did.
I'm not, you don't
consider yourself that. But
right.
In their private law, that's what they did.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
From what I understand, look, I'm a newbie at this law stuff.
You know,
I'm not a newbie in the history stuff. But under the Equal Protections Clauses, you know, when they wrote the 13th Amendment, they wrote the 14th Amendment because they looked at it and said, wait, under the Equal Protection Clauses, you know, they were just looking at the 13 southern states, and this is supported in the book I have, War Powers Under the Constitution by Whiting. They would just support, you know, and so what happened was they realized under the Constitution that you could not have in the 13th Amendment, you know, under the Equal Protection Clauses, they brought everybody, even in the North. They brought them everybody under the jurisdiction of the United States in D.C.
Yeah, but it took them a long time to do it because when let me make some points here. The 14th Amendment was written and ratified in 1868, and they tried to push it onto the white man. I mean, it was really focused in on the black man because that was the excuse they used.
But see, that's what happened. They had no status.
So,
that's the deal.
Right.
Status
is key. Let me finish my point.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is they moved the black man's slavery or his subjection from a slave owner, removed it from him, and brought it to the federal government and brought them under subjection and then gave them certain what they call civil rights, okay, benefits or whatever word you want. Let me just finish my point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they tried to get everyone to agree on this, but people, no way, forget, we don't need that. Okay, so people didn't. So what they had to do, and again, these were very patient people. They had no other choice because they couldn't do it overnight. It took many, many generations. And what they did is they just tweaked the education. They got a control of the education little by little. They got the Bar Association going. I mean, all these things, they were planning a lot of things and doing a lot of things in order to bring this country into subjection. By the time we got into the 1920s and the 30s, they were pretty much taking control of the history, rewriting history. It already had started to be rewritten. They had their own historians they were putting in power and in influential places. They were starting to take control of the educational system, and eventually the educational system became control under the federal government. And the more and more control, the more and more they changed. When I was a kid, you know, in school we were taught that Columbus was a hero. In school, my kids were going to school, they're teaching him that he was a rapist and a destroyer. You know, yeah, they said good things about him, but little. But
they're not far from the truth. Their reason, see, you know why the schools teach that? This is why I. This is what I have learned from looking for the truth. Okay, people may present facts. Okay, real facts. Okay, but the reason why they present them is only because it fits their ideology or their worldview at the moment.
Okay.
Let me give you a case in point. Okay. The eligibility of Obama to be president. All right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they say he was born overseas and he's got a foreign birth certificate and all that stuff.
Right.
Okay. Let me finish. It's real great to talk to you, man. Because you know I learn a lot.
Uh-huh.
What happened was, if you look at the date that the Constitution was signed, right, September 17, 1783, am I correct there? 1789?
Yeah, I think it was 89. Yeah.
89, okay. That creates the United States in a legal document recognized in international law, okay? Now, you have prerequisites, rules that you need to be conforming to.
I just want to make a quick note. That's all. I just want to make a quick note. You may be right on that. It might be the Declaration that really put us to the point where other nations accepted us and the Constitution.
No, it wasn't the Declaration. I'm just making a note that might be the case. No.
I don't.
Treaty of Peace, 1783.
Okay.
Okay. Constitution 1787 says the prerequisites to hold office, and there are like three for each. You know, each the executive is the president. Okay, he has to live in the United States for 14 years. Okay, now let's just go by that.
Not anymore.
Constitution was created.
No, they have to be today. That was only the beginning. I'm just going to show you
where the Constitution is created in fraud.
Oh, well,
have we been breaking laws?
Let's go.
Are you not letting me finish? Washington
no, you're
was
right.
born.
You're right. Hold on 1 minute.
Washington could not have
excuse
been
me.
A president.
Excuse me. Listen. I just
he
want
wasn't
to say
natural.
One thing.
In other words, he wasn't listen. Natural born is what you're going to say.
Let me make a point here, please, okay? All right? This is being recorded, and the purpose of this program and what we're doing here is to educate people in the political process and the judicial process. We could talk about anything and get into, but we don't want to get into theories and start to become.
This is not theory. This is true.
Hold on. We don't want to get to. Yes, the enemy has been amongst us for a long time. Some people say George Washington was the enemy. I mean, they go through all kinds of strange things. Jefferson was the enemy. Jefferson didn't believe in Christ, and he was a demon.
I don't care about their religious beliefs.
I'm just telling you that this is what people say or do. I'm not interested in those arguments or anything. What we have to do is we have to pick up with what we can pick up and what is righteous and what is right in our own minds. But I don't think we can do that.
We can do that, okay,
yeah.
By the original people. The frame of conversation is even among left-wing groups and right-wing groups and conservatives, liberals, we got to get the Constitution back. Okay? The Constitution let Washington take office as a British subject. Why did Washington do that?
I don't know what your point is, though, because I'm trying to see where you're going with this.
Wrote the law according to the law of the land, which was the Constitution, then the Constitution is fraud.
If who broke the law of the land?
Anybody who took office as a president,
well, we know,
Congress, and the Senate.
We know that in the beginning there was an exception to having to be born.
There was no exception in the Constitution.
Excuse me. In the beginning there was an exception made in so many years. Washington was actually born in this country, was he not?
But he was born as a British subject.
It doesn't matter. He was born in this country.
Not a law of contracts.
Well, they were all born as British subjects, maybe. Because
bingo. There you go.
Jefferson,
right there.
Even Jefferson, none of them wanted to break away. They wanted to fix the problem because they believed in the fundamental foundation of the
I'm
British.
I'm talking about what's written in law.
Common law came from Britain. It came from England. I don't know if you could say Britain. It came from England. It started about 300 or 400 A.D. with the Anglo-Saxons.
But they took the law into their – you understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong, what we should do as people, okay, in our relationship to the government, okay? People are quoting the Constitution and using it, but I'm saying what they're using is wrong.
Okay. I don't understand your point. What is it that's wrong that they're using?
Because
I really
broke the law from the very beginning. We became England.
What law is wrong with the Constitution?
Okay, I'll get the Constitution. It's right here. It's in the qualifications to hold office as president, right from number one. Okay, you have to be lived in the United States for 14 years.
Okay,
okay?
Well, no one could
nobody,
no, qualify.
Washington could not have taken the office
no
of president until 1801.
No one qualified for that in the beginning.
But why did they write it?
Because they, at some point, that's what they wanted the case to be. But no, it goes beyond that. In order to become a president of the United States, it's the only required. It's the only required political seat that requires this.
No, it doesn't. Members of the Senate have to be in the United States for nine years, and the members of the House of Representatives have to live in the United States for 7 years.
Okay.
That is
we're
not the only requirement.
We're not getting anywhere with this conversation. Would you please?
I'm saying that we took office as regents.
Have to do with common law, please.
Let me explain something here. First of all, you know, we don't want to argue these points. It is obvious that when you first created a country and you make a rule that someone has to be something for 14 years, and I want to go one step further than that.
And then you break it.
You never let me finish my point here.
Mm-hmm.
To be president of the United States today, you must be natural born. Okay? You must be. Now, forget the United States, because you don't have to be a natural born U.S. citizen. You have to be a natural born person in one of the states. That's what's required, right? Now, at some point, you may be right. I think they did have 14 years or something, but nobody, if a nation was started today, and you say, okay, you have to be inside this nation for 14 years before you could be a president. We can't have a president for 14 years. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not?
No, it ain't. If you're saying that we have common law, then we don't need a president.
Well, that may be an arguable point. I don't know.
If you're saying that we have common law, then we don't need a president. The president is the president of the United States. He's not the president of all the states.
But listen, it is true that the United States is a corporation. It's a trust, okay? And it was the union of the states. They put together and they wrote a constitution and they made the rules and they talked about the executive power. They talked about the judicial power and the legislative power, and they made all the rules. And I agree with those rules. The problem is that they then put them in a box. They said, look, you can do only these things. Okay, and this is how you're going to do it. This is the powers that you have. This is the powers that you have. They divided it amongst three powers, but ultimately the big power is the people. Then they put them in a deeper box by putting the Bill of Rights in there. I think we started to run into problems when we started to write other, you know, amendments to the Constitution, because we have a lot of problems with 17 amendments.
Why are we adhering to the Constitution?
I'm not finished.
I'm sorry.
13th Amendment, all those things. We have a lot of problems with a lot of those amendments. But the first 10 was pretty darn good. I think the base of the Constitution was pretty darn good. They decided to have and call the person a president to make, and I think the reason for that, they didn't want to call him governor because it's not a country. Now, people think that the United States is a country. It's not.
It's a corporation.
It's a nation. It's a common group of people that from many countries brought together, and we put together a trust or a corporation for the sole purpose to work together for the protection of this entire, for the boundaries, for the protection of the country, to put our forces together. Now, it's been abused and beat up and so on and so forth. Nobody will disagree with that. We're trying to put them back in the box.
Right.
And what we're here, the purpose
make,
of
make.
This group...
Hey guys, I understand your argument.
Put
you know
them back in the box in our own towns, in our own counties, in our own states. And by doing that, we will put Washington in its place. As soon as Connecticut catches on, and Pennsylvania catches on, and Ohio, and Washington, and California, and Texas, and Florida, as soon as they catch on to what we're doing here, and they do the same thing, now Washington will be brought into control, and we will be back to a free country again, and we'll be back to the way it should be. All the powers that they've taken and abusing, we need to take them back. But first, you have to fix your own backyard, and that's what we're doing here in New York.
Okay, check it out. I'm from New York, all right? Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I'm not cutting your legs out from under you.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think what you guys are doing is admirable. You know, but what I'm stating is the reality of the situation.
Right, but
you know,
what
from my point of view.
How does it edify us or benefit us? Tell us your main point. I mean, I'm sure you have
I think that we should turn around and all these organizations, okay, should turn around and stop doing what we're doing and lobby the government to take us out of the War Powers Act.
Yeah, but
that changes the whole relationship between the government and its people.
There's only one way to do that.
Do you know that if we went out of war powers,
did you hear what
we
I
would
said?
Have to repeal every law
did you hear what I
while
said?
The country was under war powers into
that's
a peacetime situation?
That would be a great thing, but that's going to
happen.
That
would be a great thing. That would be the greatest thing in
yeah,
my
did
life.
Did you hear what I just
that.
Said? Did you hear what I just said? Because you should have went back with a question. Unless you
I'm sorry.
Hear.
I'm sorry.
Okay. There's only one way to do this. Now, you're
going
to tell me that you know the answer, and you're going to tell me or you're going to ask me what is the one way to do it.
What is the one way to do it?
The one way to do it is doing exactly what we're doing right now in this room, and that is focusing in on taking control of the political and the judicial process. It's the only way it could happen. It's all politics are local. Everything is local. You have to take control of your local government first before you can take control of your federal government.
Let me ask you guys a question, because one of the things I'm very interested in is the education system.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of that. Well, let me go back to what we were talking about before for a second. It's a great conversation. I'm learning. You know what I'm saying? You know, I may not agree with you on every point, but what we are doing is learning. And we don't learn by asking ourselves.
Before we go any further, let me get a little advice from some other people. We're still on recording. We're moving close to 2 hours now. Do you think we should shut the recording down or let it go for another 10 minutes or what?
I'll tell you what, let somebody else speak, because you know what? People don't want to hear me all night.
Well, the point is, we don't.
I agree with you guys to a certain extent, but I think, you know, what we're under, people don't realize what we are really under. We're under a martial law in this country.
Yeah, we know that.
You know, you said that
before,
when we jailed the most amount
of
people.
Look, we know we're under admiralty law. We know the whole thing. This is what the town courts are all about. That's why they brought these town courts, all these Nisi Prius courts together. We're talking about that, but we're talking about the nuts and the bolts and how to fix it. We're talking about how to rebel, how to stop it, how to challenge it.
Here's the problem with lobbying. Our representatives that we have now are chosen by the corporations through the party.
Yeah, you know what?
You can lobby your ass off. It doesn't mean anything. We have to get rid of it. We have to take the party out, and we have to put our own people in, and then you can get out of the War Powers Act. And the other point with the War Powers Act is this stuff is all true, but it's the emperor has no clothes. They don't recognize it. So
yeah, a lot of people
you're over there trying to say
it,
he's naked, and they don't want to see it. But the thing is the guys that are controlling us, they don't know that the emperor has no clothes either. I mean, like I was saying before,
the judges, the lawyers, the politicians.
No, they don't. And so when we quote the Constitution and we quote Supreme Court precedent, they're very hesitant to go against that because they don't really know we're under the war powers. And the guys that do know we're under that, they don't have the balls to say it, because if they said it, everybody would say, "What the hell are you talking about?" We would get out of it then, wouldn't
that we? That is a good way to frame the conversation.
Right.
Yeah, that segues into your conversation about Ron Paul, that he wouldn't sign off on a letter to get out of the War Powers Act.
No, he would not.
But don't you think he knows this? Don't you think if he...
I think he should know it, but you know what? I think after 27 years of Congress, of being in Congress, see...
Don't
I got involved with the Tea Party movement for like 3 years.
Listen, Gennard, I just want to say, don't you think he knows that maybe you can't just accomplish all the goals that we like?
You're right.
Look,
we got to get rid of the Federal Reserve System.
If we get rid of the Federal Reserve System,
that's a big thing.
A lot of our problems, and that's where his main focus was. And by the way, Gennard, I wanted to ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
The stripes pointing down, according to one of our friends, Ryan, means that we're in war.
You know what? There's a site you can go. okay, that describes all the military, all the flags of the United States. And I had learned about this site. I was researching the Goldfinch flag. There, on the site about the flag, I don't see it, and it was only mentioned in the creation of the state of Hawaii about the Goldfinch flag. But there was a case that was mentioned by somebody on the internet in a legal talk show, you know, with Louis Ewing. All right, it was a guy named Lloyd Smith, who happens to be old, and he's a type 1 diabetic, and he has problems typing in and speaking and stuff like that. But it's Rushstadt versus something or other. And I can't research that case on the internet. And I've been trying to get that on an interlibrary loan system where you go to your public library and you actually fill out a form. You know, you could get books from different any public or private library worldwide that's willing to lend the book. I haven't been able to get that, though. And I don't even have the correct spelling. I've emailed the gentleman a few times to get the correct spelling on that. But, you know, there is some dispute over the Goldfinch flag, but there is no dispute in my mind about the war powers.
Before we go any further, we can continue this conversation. I just want to end the recording. We're over 2 hours. I don't like to go that long. I like to stick at an hour and a half. Because people, you know, the purpose... Just want to get back to the purpose, and then we can pick this conversation right back up. The purpose of this program ultimately is to teach people. We've also come and to bring things to light that people may not have heard or seen before, and to try to get them involved locally to do something, to step up and really take this country back. And
not,
the only way we could do that, excuse me. The only way we could do that is by taking back the political process and the judicial process, and we're offering a way to do that. Now, meanwhile, you know, there's a lot of other things we have to look at and do, and we can continue this particular conversation. But one of the things is we've come to realize if we have tapes longer than an hour and a half, for people to come and catch up and they hit a 3-hour or 4-hour tape, they don't continue listening. So I'm going to cut the tape loose right now, and then we can continue our conversation. So give me a moment to end this.
Yeah, absolutely.